This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
It was just another ordinary Saturday, or so I thought when I woke up that morning. Little did I know by the end of the day, I'd have a story that felt too surreal to be true. One that I'm still trying to wrap my head around, even as I write this down. It started off simple enough. My fiancé Alex, my best friend Jamie, and I were hanging out bored out of our minds, scrolling through our phones without really looking at anything. That's when Alex had the bright idea. Hey, why don't we go for a hike? It's been ages since we visited the old trail. The old trail he was talking about wasn't just any trail. It was this popular hike leading to a giant rock hanging off a cliff with a view that overlooked our city. It was beautiful, and honestly, a bit of a trek. But the path was straightforward. I had hiked it more times than I could count, and had even braved it in the dark after watching the 4th of July fireworks. Jamie perked up at the suggestion, her eyes lighting up with excitement. That sounds amazing. Let's do it. And just like that, it was decided. We quickly grabbed our essentials, water, flashlights, and some snacks, and set off. The trail wasn't far from where we were, so we decided to walk to the starting point. The sun was beginning to dip lower in the sky, casting long shadows through the trees as we reached the trailhead. The light had that golden quality to it, beautiful, but fleeting. We knew we had limited daylight left, but the trail was familiar, like an old friend. Confident in our collective memory of the path, we pressed on. The hike was as beautiful as I remembered. The trees formed a green canopy overhead, with rays of sunlight piercing through in places, lighting up the forest floor. We were all in high spirits, chatting and laughing as we walked the familiar path. But as we continued, the light began to fade faster than we anticipated. It wasn't long before we reached the part of the trail that just goes straight for what seems like forever. We were making good time, but with the daylight fading, we unanimously decided it wasn't worth the risk of navigating the steep part in the dark. "Let's turn back," Alex suggested, and Jamie and I quickly agreed. Turning on our flashlights, we began our trek back. Everything seemed normal at first. The path was just as I remembered it, a comforting thought in the encroaching darkness. However, there's this one spot on the trail where the trees open up, and you can see the entire downtown area of our city. It's always been my favorite part, feeling so high up and looking down at the city lights starting to twinkle as night takes over. But tonight, something was off. As we approached the clearing, I felt a chill that had nothing to do with the evening air. The city below looked different. It was like looking at a reflection in a mirror, familiar yet unmistakably wrong. "Does the city look weird to anyone else?" I asked, trying to keep the tremble out of my voice. Alex was the first to respond. "It feels like we're looking at it backwards," he said, his voice filled with confusion. Jamie nodded, her usual bubbly demeanor replaced with unease. "I thought it was just me. I didn't want to say anything." We lingered for a moment, trying to shake the feeling that something was very wrong, but with darkness fully settling in and a long walk back ahead of us, we reluctantly turned away from the distorted view of our city, the unease growing with every step back into the forest. Little did we know, our night was about to get a lot stranger. The further we walked, the more everything around us seemed to shift into a world that was familiar, yet eerily different. The path, which I could have sworn I knew like the back of my hand, twisted and turned in ways that didn't make sense. My heart pounded in my chest, a mix of fear and confusion making it hard to keep my thoughts straight. "We're just tired, that's all," Jamie tried to reassure us, her voice a bit too high to be convincing. "It's easy to feel lost in the dark, but this was different. The once straightforward trail seemed to be playing tricks on us, leading us in circles. Every step we took felt like it was taking us deeper into an uncharted part of the woods. The familiar markers and signs were gone, replaced by an oppressive feeling of being watched by unseen eyes. Then, the path changed. It wasn't just our imaginations. The ground underfoot felt less worn, wilder, as if we were the first to tread this route in years. "This isn't right," Alex muttered, stopping in his tracks. "We should have hit the main road by now." Panic set in as we tried to backtrack, only to find that the path we had come from seemed to have vanished. The trees loomed larger, their branches reaching out like hands, trying to ensnare us in this nightmarish landscape. It was then we stumbled upon the clearing. Not the one with the view of the city, but something entirely different, something out of place. In the middle of the woods, hidden away as if meant to be kept secret, was a door in the ground. It looked old, rusted, like the entrance to a forgotten mine or a bunker. Beside the door, arranged in a circle, were white chairs, each with a piece of white cloth draped over it, or lying on the ground nearby. No signs of a campfire, no footprints, just these chairs in a silent assembly. My skin crawled at the sight. "What is this place?" Jamie whispered, her flashlight beam dancing over the bizarre scene. We didn't know it then, but we were about to make a decision that would haunt us. Curiosity overcame our fear, and we approached the door, the mystery of it pulling us in. It was a mistake. Each step towards the circle felt heavier, as if we were being watched, judged by the unseen. Suddenly, the silence of the woods was oppressive, filled with the weight of secrets and stories untold. We realized we had to leave, to escape this place that felt so wrong. But every attempt to leave led us back to the chairs, the door. It was as if the woods themselves were reshuffling, keeping us tethered to this spot. Our phones were useless, our calls for help disappearing into the void. Panic fully set in as the reality of our situation dawned on us. Were we going to be trapped here, in this unexplainable loop? Time lost meaning as we wandered, caught in a cycle of fear and desperation. Then, just as suddenly as it had all begun, it ended. The path cleared, as if the woods had decided to release us from its grip. We found ourselves stumbling out onto the familiar road, the night air never having felt so sweet. But the relief was short-lived. The ordeal had taken its toll, leaving us with more questions than answers. What had happened in those woods? And more importantly, why had it happened to us? The moment we stepped out of the woods and onto the road, it felt like waking up from a nightmare. My legs were shaky, my breath came in short gasps, and my heart was still racing. Alex, Jamie, and I looked at each other, the relief in our eyes mixed with confusion and fear. We had made it out, but the ordeal had left a mark on us that we couldn't just shake off. As we made our way back home, the city lights seemed to mock our terror with their normalcy. People were out, laughing and living their lives, oblivious to the horror that lurked just beyond their sight. We were safe now, but the feeling of being trapped in those twisted woods lingered. Once home, Alex checked his phone to call our parents and let them know we were okay, despite the late hour. That's when we noticed something odd. His photo gallery showed over 1,000 new pictures, all taken at 10:32 p.m., the time we were hopelessly lost. But instead of photos, there were only bursts of white, nothingness captured in digital form. It was impossible. Alex had been using his phone as a flashlight. Not once did he switch it to camera mode. The next day, we tried to make sense of what had happened. We talked about going back to the woods, to find that door, those chairs, anything that could explain our experience. But it took us a year to muster the courage to actually do it. When we finally went back, the woods felt different, ordinary even. The path was just as I remembered it before that night. There was no sign of the door in the ground or the circle of chairs. It was as if they had never existed. Instead, we stumbled upon a rusted old meat grinder in a clearing. It seemed out of place, another oddity in a place that now felt alien to us. I've tried to rationalize what happened, to find a logical explanation. Was it a collective hallucination? Had we somehow wandered into a part of the woods affected by a natural gas leak that caused hallucinations? But none of it made sense, especially not the photos on Alex's phone. The experience has left a lasting fear of the woods in me. What once was a place of beauty and adventure now holds a shadow of dread. I've shared our story online, hoping to find others who might have experienced something similar, looking for any theory that could explain that night. Yet no matter how much we discuss it, Alex, Jamie, and I can't find any answers. Alex doesn't like to talk about it. It unnerves him to dwell on something so beyond our understanding. Jamie and I still revisit the story occasionally, turning it over in our minds, but we always hit the same wall. There's no explanation, no closure. That night in the woods changed something in us. It's a reminder of how small and vulnerable we are in the face of the unknown. We came back from the woods, but a part of us will always be lost there, stuck in a loop of fear and confusion. The woods are no longer just trees and trails to me. They're a mystery, one that I'm not sure I ever want to solve. My friends and I had been living in the buzzing heart of New York City, a place that never sleeps. But we were craving an adventure away from the concrete jungle. So we decided to embark on a road trip that would take us to the vast, open nature of Canada, circling Lake Ontario, and then back home through the scenic routes of upstate New York. I guess you could say we were looking for a breath of fresh air, quite literally. You see, I'm from Spain, a country known for its rich history, vibrant culture, and stunning landscapes. But ever since moving to the USA for law school, along with my friends Lisa, Anna, and Charlotte, I've been eager to explore this new continent's wonders. While I've always had a knack for adventure, thanks to my days as a scout back in Europe, my friends, well, let's just say they were more accustomed to the city life. Despite this, their spirits were high, and their enthusiasm for our trip was contagious. Our plan was simple, or so we thought. We would rent a car, pack our essentials, and hit the open road with the kind of freedom you only read about in novels. The anticipation was electric as we discussed our route, the places we'd see, and the memories we'd make. Little did we know, our adventure would take a turn into the unknown, giving us a story we'd never forget. The drive was long but scenic, filled with laughter, sing-alongs, and endless discussions about everything and nothing. As the city skyline faded into the rearview mirror, we were greeted by the lush, expansive landscapes of the countryside. It was during these moments, with the wind in our hair and the world at our fingertips, that I felt truly alive. However, as the sun began to set and we neared our final destination for the night, an off-grid cabin in the remote woods of upstate New York, a sense of unease began to creep in. The cabin, described as a quaint nature-integrated retreat, was about half an hour's drive from Harrisburg, or so we thought. Our excitement waned as darkness enveloped us, and the reality of our rustic accommodation set in. Navigating the forest's muddy trails became a challenge as we lost internet connection and had to rely on an old-fashioned map. I could sense the tension rising among us, especially when we stumbled upon a lone, neatly kept campfire deep in the woods, with no one in sight. It was eerie, to say the least, and a stark reminder of how far removed we were from the bustling streets of New York City. Eventually, after a few wrong turns and a growing sense of apprehension, we arrived at the cabin. It was exactly as described: old, made of log wood, and utterly devoid of modern conveniences, like electricity and running water. The reality of spending a night here, so isolated and disconnected, began to sink in. Despite our initial reservations, Lisa and I, with our somewhat limited experience in the wilderness, took charge. We ventured inside with our phone flashlights leading the way, searching for any old flashlights and assessing the fireplace situation. Unfortunately, the rain had soaked through everything, leaving us with little hope for a warm fire. The cabin had a certain charm, though, with its rustic aesthetic and the promise of an authentic wilderness experience. As we settled in, making the best of our situation with some pasta and the few comforts we had managed to find, I couldn't help but feel a mix of excitement and apprehension about what the night would bring. Little did I know, it would be an experience that would test my bravery and leave us with a tale we'd never dare forget. The cabin, with its old wooden charm and absence of modern noise, felt like stepping back in time. Lisa and I had managed to find a couple of ancient flashlights, and although the attempt to light the fireplace was a flop, thanks to the relentless rain, we made do. With a small fire burning in the stove and the pasta boiling away, our spirits began to lift, even if just slightly. Anna and Charlotte busied themselves with setting up the beds and shutting the cold out by closing windows. It felt cozy, in an adventurous sort of way. But as night crept upon us, so did an unease that I couldn't quite shake off. It was then that Anna, one of the city girls, approached me with a serious look in her eyes. She whispered, so as not to alarm Lisa and Charlotte, about an old cemetery she noticed while we were driving to the cabin. And more disturbingly, she claimed to have seen a figure moving around it. I wanted to laugh it off. I mean, we were here to escape the stress of law school, not to spook ourselves with ghost stories. But the look on Anna's face, and her earnest swear that she wasn't making it up, gave me pause. I reassured her that I'd lock all the doors before we went to sleep, trying to downplay my growing concern. The night wore on, and after a modest meal of pasta and an attempt at making s'mores on the stove, the girls retired to the loft space for bed. I, on the other hand, felt drawn to the outside. Maybe it was the city dweller in me, craving the rare silence that only nature could offer. Or perhaps it was my scout's heart, longing for a moment alone with the wild. Sitting on the front porch with my last beer, the only sounds were the gentle patter of rain and the distant murmur of the creek. It was peaceful, a stark contrast to the bustling streets of NYC. But as I scanned the dark woods with my flashlight, a strange sensation washed over me. It was as if the forest itself was holding its breath. Suddenly, a roar shattered the night's calm, unlike anything I'd ever heard. My mind raced to identify the sound, but it matched nothing I knew from the wilderness of Spain or the stories I'd heard about American wildlife. It was deep, unsettling, and decidedly non-bear-like, despite my initial thought. That's when I saw it, a figure, towering and shadowy, lurking at the tree line. Its eyes caught the light from my flashlight, reflecting an eerie glow. The figure was massive, easily towering over my own height of 6'4". For a moment, time stood still as we locked gazes. Then, as quickly as it appeared, it vanished behind a tree with another roar. My heart hammered against my ribs, fear and adrenaline coursing through me. I was no stranger to the woods, but nothing in my experience as a scout had prepared me for this. With no time to ponder, I rushed back inside, locking every door and closing every curtain I could find. My mind raced with possibilities of what that creature could be, but none made sense. The wild tales of cryptids and monsters I'd scoffed at before suddenly seemed all too real. I tried to convince myself it was just exhaustion playing tricks on me, but the fear I felt was undeniable. Eventually, my adrenaline waned, and exhaustion took over, allowing me to fall into a restless sleep. But that night, the shadows of the forest felt alive, and the unknown lurked just beyond the safety of our cabin walls. The first rays of sunlight filtering through the old, dusty windows of the cabin were a welcome sight after the night's eerie events. As I woke up, the memories of the towering figure in the woods felt like a distant nightmare. Yet, the chill of fear lingered, a stark contrast to the calm and beautiful morning outside. I decided to keep the night's terror to myself. There was no need to scare Lisa, Anna, and Charlotte with what I hoped was just a figment of my imagination. We prepared breakfast together, the mood light and cheerful, as if the previous night's tension had been lifted by the day's bright promise. The girls chatted excitedly about the day ahead, blissfully unaware of the shadow that had loomed so close to us. I joined in, forcing smiles and laughter, trying to bury the fear that gnawed at my insides. As we ate, I couldn't help but steal glances towards the tree line, half expecting to see those eerie eyes staring back at me. But the forest was peaceful, its secrets hidden beneath layers of greenery and sunlight. The drive back to New York City was filled with reflections on our adventure. The girls reminisced about the beauty of Canada, the charm of Lake Ontario, and the rustic night in the cabin. I listened, chiming in where appropriate, but my thoughts were elsewhere, wrestling with the reality of what I had seen. Was it a trick of the light, a shadow cast by the fire, or something else? Something alive and watching from the depths of the forest. As the city's skyline came into view, the wilderness and its mysteries seemed to fade away, replaced by the familiar bustle of urban life. Yet the image of the creature lingered in my mind, a stark reminder that the world held more mysteries than we could ever understand. Once home, the need to share my experience grew stronger. I turned to the internet, poring over forums and articles, searching for any explanation that could shed light on what I had seen. Could it have been a bear, distorted by fear and the night? Or was it something else, a creature of legend roaming the forests of upstate New York? My quest for answers was fruitless, leaving me with more questions than before. In the end, I decided to share my story here, hoping that by putting it out into the world, I might find some semblance of understanding or closure. Maybe someone out there has experienced something similar, or could offer a rational explanation that eluded me. I'm not sure what I saw that night, but I can't deny the fear and awe it inspired in me. As I reflect on our adventure, I realize it was more than just a road trip. It was a journey into the unknown, a reminder that the world is vast and filled with wonders and terrors alike. Despite the fear, I wouldn't change a thing about our trip. It's these experiences that shape us, pushing us to explore further, to seek answers, and to marvel at the mysteries that lie just beyond our understanding. The news hit me like a freight train. Last summer, while I was half a world away, my sister Grace vanished into thin air during a camping trip with friends. Grace, just turned 20, and I, already deep into the throes of adulthood, had let life and its myriad distractions pull us apart. I was busy carving out my own slice of the world, and she was, God knows where. It wasn't supposed to be like this. We had promised to stick together after our parents died, but promises, like the silence between us, grew heavy and hard to carry. I was in Europe when it happened, absorbed in a new job, a new life, oblivious to the storm brewing back home. Christmas was supposed to be our reunion, a chance to mend the frayed edges of our relationship. Instead, I came back to an empty chair at the dinner table and a void that echoed her name. "Why didn't anyone tell me?" I demanded, the question hanging heavy in the cold, unyielding air of our childhood home. "The police didn't have your new number," my uncle muttered, avoiding my gaze. "And her friends, well, they thought she was with you." A pit formed in my stomach, a gnawing sense of guilt that I couldn't shake. I had been too wrapped up in my own life, too distant. Grace's messages, once frequent and full of life, had dwindled to silence. I chalked it up to her being busy, to us moving in different circles. I never considered the silence was not by choice. Determined to uncover the truth, I pressed for details. Her friends' stories were a jigsaw puzzle with half the pieces missing. They claimed she left their campsite in the middle of the night for the washroom and never returned. Their accounts were riddled with inconsistencies, each recalling a slightly different location for their campsite. It was clear they were hiding something, their rehearsed indifference a poor mask for underlying panic. The more I probed, the more their stories unraveled. One moment they were seated on logs around the fire, the next, They claimed the area was clear of any natural seeding. Their lies were as transparent as glass, yet impenetrable. Frustrated, I turned to the police, but was met with bureaucratic indifference. "We'll look into it when the weather clears," they promised, a hollow assurance that did nothing to quell the storm brewing within me. As winter's grip on the land tightened, so did the knot of fear in my heart. The search teams, limited by the snow and bureaucratic red tape, had little to go on. The friends, now clearly enemies of the truth, clammed up, hiding behind threats of legal action. I was alone, battling against the shadows of what might have been. When spring finally melted the last of the snow, I received the call that shattered any lingering hope. A prospector panning for gold in the river stumbled upon a grim discovery. Finger bones, small and unmistakably human. The subsequent weeks brought more pieces of the horrifying puzzle. A fragment of skull, ribs, and a chilling silence from the authorities. They closed the case, dismissing it as a tragic accident, but the marrow-scraped bones spoke of a darker tale. I should have been there for her. After our parents' death, I had sworn to protect her, to be her guardian in a world that had already taken so much from us. Yet when she needed me most, I was chasing ghosts in a foreign land, leaving her to face the darkness alone. The guilt was a constant companion, a shadow that matched my every step. Grace's disappearance was a wake-up call, a brutal reminder of the fragility of promises and the price of neglect. I quit my job, left my newfound life behind, and returned to the place where it all began, armed with nothing but determination and a haunting question: what happened to my sister? The truth was out there, buried beneath layers of lies and deception. I was ready to dig it up, no matter the cost. The morning I decided to confront Grace's friends was clear. The kind of day that felt like a slap in the face when you're nursing a heart full of grief. The sun was too bright, the sky too blue. Nature had no right to be so indifferent. I tracked down the first of them, a guy named Darren, at a local coffee shop where the scent of fresh brew couldn't mask the stench of his fear. He saw me coming, his eyes darting around as if looking for the nearest exit. But there was no escaping the truth. "Talk to me about that night," I demanded, sliding into the seat across from him. His hands trembled around his cup, a telltale sign of a man with something to hide. "It was like we told the cops," he started, his voice a rehearsed monotone. "Grace left for the bathroom in the middle of the night and just didn't come back. But I'd done my homework. The inconsistencies in their stories were too glaring to ignore. Each friend had mentioned a different location for their makeshift campsite, none of which matched up with the areas the search teams had scoured. It was as if they were deliberately sending us on a wild goose chase. One claimed they were surrounded by dense forest. Another said they were near a clearing. Lies, all of it. When I pressed harder, Darren's facade began to crumble. We thought it'd be easier this way," he admitted, avoiding my gaze. "Easier for whom?" I wanted to scream. But I kept my cool, pushing for more until the dam broke and the truth began to trickle out. They had been drinking, lost track of time. And by the time they realized Grace was missing, it was already morning. Guilt, fear, and the instinct to protect themselves had muddled their stories, turning them into adversaries rather than allies in the search for Grace. As winter's relentless chill gave way to the tentative warmth of spring, the call I'd been dreading finally came. A prospector, more accustomed to sifting through the silt for specks of gold, had found something far more chilling: the delicate bones of a human finger, washed clean by the river. With the thaw came more discoveries: a fragment of a skull, a handful of ribs, bones that told a story no one wanted to hear. The police were quick to write it off as an unfortunate accident, a young girl lost to the wilderness. But the condition of the bones spoke of a violence that nature alone couldn't inflict. The marrow had been scraped clean, a detail that haunted me. Predators, the police suggested, trying to pacify me with talk of natural decomposition. But the scratches on the bones, the way they were scattered, it was deliberate, a sickening puzzle left for us to piece together. I should have been her protector, her unwavering support. Instead, I had allowed distance and silence to grow between us, a chasm that now seemed insurmountable. My promise to our parents, to keep her safe, lay shattered at my feet. The weight of my failure bore down on me as I packed up my life once again, this time driven not by ambition, but by a desperate need for redemption. Grace's voice, silent for so long, now screamed for justice in my ears. I would find out what happened to her, expose the lies that had buried the truth, and I would start with the town that had turned its back on one of its own. The small town near the forest where Grace vanished lay under a blanket of silence as thick as the fog that hugged its streets. The locals, with their tight smiles and wary glances, seemed part of the landscape, as if they too had roots burrowing deep into the soil, hiding secrets alongside the bones of the past. I felt like an outsider, a stranger poking around where he wasn't wanted. But Grace's voice, or the memory of it, spurred me on. I needed answers, and this town, with its quaint facades and whispered rumors, held them. My first stop was the local diner, a place where news traveled faster than the wind. The chatter quieted as I entered, a dozen pairs of eyes sizing me up, weighing my intentions. I ordered coffee and pie, more interested in the conversations around me than the food. "You're that fella looking for his sister, aren't you?" The waitress, a middle-aged woman with kind eyes, slid the plate in front of me. Her voice was low, meant only for my ears. "Yes, ma'am, Grace. She went camping last summer and..." My voice trailed off, the words catching in my throat. "Strange thing, that." She glanced around before leaning in closer. "Folks here, they don't go into those woods. Bad things happen." The warning was cryptic, yet it echoed others I'd heard since arriving. The woods, it seemed, had a reputation, one steeped in tragedy and whispered fears. Determined to learn more, I visited the ranger's station, a small building perched on the edge of the wilderness. Inside, I found more evasion, cloaked in polite professionalism. "I'm Dustin Hill. I've spoken with Ranger Dan on the phone," I introduced myself, hoping to cut through the formality. The ranger, a bear of a man with years of the forest etched into his face, regarded me with a mix of pity and frustration. "Son, I understand your pain, but some things are best left alone." His words were a barrier, a sign that even those sworn to protect and serve had their limits when it came to the darkness lurking in those woods. It was only after pressing, after insisting on my right to know, that he reluctantly handed over a map, pointing out the last known location of Grace's campsite. "Be careful," he warned, his voice heavy with unspoken dread. "The forest doesn't always give back what it takes." The cabin, when I finally learned of its existence, was shrouded in local lore. Runthorn Cabin, nestled deep in the woods, was the stuff of legend, a place where reality blurred with the supernatural. Years back, a tragedy unfolded there. A local, his voice a whisper, shared over a beer at the town's only bar. 2 children went missing. When they were found, one was changed. The town prefers to forget, but some say the woods remember. The story was a patchwork of rumors and fear, but it resonated with an eerie familiarity. Grace had always been drawn to the mysteries of the natural world, to stories that danced on the edge of reality. Had she, in her quest for adventure, stumbled upon something far more sinister? Armed with nothing but a map and a growing sense of unease, I made my plans to visit Runthorn Cabin. If the town was intent on burying its secrets, then I would dig them up, piece by haunting piece. Grace's voice, silenced by the woods, deserved to be heard, and I would be the one to echo it through the silence. The journey to Runthorn Cabin was a testament to the stubbornness of the wild, a path reclaimed by nature every chance it got. My steps were dogged, fueled by a mixture of dread and determination. Grace's spirit, or what I carried of it, pushed me forward through the underbrush and the lingering mists of early morning. The forest had a way of dampening sound, making the world seem hushed, as if it were holding its breath. Birds watched in silence as I passed, their usual song swallowed by the dense canopy above. The further I ventured, the more I felt the weight of unseen eyes, a constant reminder that I was an intruder here. Runthorn Cabin finally emerged, a stark, unnatural break in the endless green. It stood as a monument to desolation, its timbers rotting, windows dark. It looked less like a place of refuge, and more like a final resting place for lost souls. The air grew colder as I approached, a chill that seemed to seep into my bones. It wasn't just the shadow of the cabin that cooled the air. It was something else, something ancient and unkind. Inside, the cabin was as abandoned as the stories suggested. Dust motes danced in beams of light that pierced the gloom, revealing a space untouched by time. My footsteps were loud in the silence, each creak of the floorboards, a thunderclap in the stillness. I was about to dismiss the cabin as just another empty structure, a place haunted more by memories than anything tangible, when I noticed the marks. Scratches on the wood, deep and deliberate, that spoke of desperation and terror. They led me to a loose floorboard, hidden in the shadow of the hearth. Beneath it, I found a charm, a small silver letter L, tarnished but unmistakable. Graces. A surge of emotions flooded through me, a mix of relief and profound sorrow. She had been here, in this very spot, and something terrible had happened. Nightfall in the woods is a rapid descent into darkness, and with it came a creeping fog, wrapping the cabin in a shroud. I had planned to leave before dusk, to avoid being caught in the open after dark, but the charm had changed everything. I needed time to think, to plan my next steps. The decision to stay might have saved my life or sealed my fate. As night closed in, the forest came alive with sounds. The rustling of leaves, the crack of branches underfoot, and something else. A low, guttural growl that seemed to come from all directions. The door to the cabin swung open with agonizing slowness, revealing a silhouette against the night. Tall, impossibly thin, its movements were jerky, unnatural. My hand went to the gun I'd brought, more for comfort than any belief it would protect me. The creature stepped into the light, and I saw it clearly for the first time. It was a perversion of human and animal, its eyes hollow pits of despair, its mouth a gaping maw of sharp, uneven teeth. This was no man, no beast I knew of. This was the embodiment of the legend, a creature born of darkness and hunger. Our eyes met, and in that moment, I understood the true nature of the forest. It wasn't just a place of beauty and life. It was a keeper of secrets, a guardian of horrors too terrible to contemplate. The creature lunged, and the cabin became a battleground. Shots rang out, echoes of my desperation. We fought, a dance of death in the heart of the wild. Every blow I landed was met with a snarl, every shot a howl of rage. When it was over, the creature lay still, a twisted mass of shadow and sinew. I was left standing, breathless and bloodied, the victor in a fight I could scarcely believe. The forest, it seemed, was willing to release its secrets, but only at a great cost. I stepped out of the cabin, into the night, my heart heavy with the weight of my discovery. Grace's charm was a token, a reminder of why I had come, and what I had found was a truth more terrifying than any ghost story. The forest whispered around me, a mournful sigh that felt like an apology. I knew then that my search was far from over. The mystery of Grace's disappearance had been replaced by a greater question, one that touched on the very essence of nature and the darkness that lies in the heart of man. The aftermath of the confrontation left me with more than just physical scars. As I made my way back to the motel, the early morning light did nothing to dispel the darkness that had settled inside me. The creature, the embodiment of the forest's whispered warnings, was dead. But the questions, the haunting uncertainties about Grace and the nature of that beast, lingered like fog over a river. Sitting on the edge of the bed, the charm clutched in my hand, I couldn't escape the feeling that I'd stepped into a story far bigger than myself, a narrative woven from the threads of local legend and family tragedy. Grace had ventured into these woods seeking adventure, perhaps chasing tales of the supernatural, and found herself caught in a nightmare, Ranger Dan's visit was unexpected. He came as the bearer of grim tidings, a silent acknowledgement of the battle fought and the price paid. His hands were steady as he tended to my wounds, the motions of a man well acquainted with the casualties of the wilderness. "There were two sons," he finally said, breaking the silence that had stretched between us. The story he told was one of grief, madness, and a family torn apart by a tragedy that spiraled into legend. The creature I had faced was once human, consumed by guilt and transformed by the cruel alchemy of the forest into something else entirely. I listened, the pieces falling into place with a clarity that was almost painful. The town's silence, the ranger's warnings, the cabin in the woods, all were part of a tapestry of sorrow that had ensnared my sister. As Dan spoke of the forest's inability to relinquish its hold on those it claimed, a cold realization settled over me. The hunger, the deep, gnawing emptiness that had begun to take root within me, wasn't just the aftermath of adrenaline or the physical toll of the fight. It was something far more insidious, a legacy of the encounter that threatened to consume me from the inside out. "Are you hungry?" Dan's question, innocuous under different circumstances, struck me like a blow. Yes, I was hungry, but it was a hunger that food couldn't satisfy. It was a craving for something darker, a pull toward the shadowed places of the world where the line between man and monster blurred. His parting words, a soft-spoken warning against the unkillable nature of the beast, left me with a decision to make. I could return to the world I knew, carry on with the pretense of normalcy, or I could face the truth of what I'd become, what the forest had made me. The decision, when it came, was as inevitable as the changing of the seasons. I would go back, not just to burn the remnants of the creature and the cabin, but to confront my own transformation. If the forest had claimed me, then I would claim it in return, becoming guardian to its secrets and its silence. Grace's charm, a tangible link to the sister I couldn't save, was my anchor to humanity, a reminder of the love that had driven me into the heart of darkness. I would return to the woods, armed with fire and resolve, to finish what had started with a simple camping trip. But first, I needed to tell the story, to leave a record of what had happened for those who might follow in my footsteps. If I couldn't return, if the forest claimed me as its own, then at least I could offer a warning, a beacon for others to steer clear of the shadows that lurk beneath the canopy. The road ahead was uncertain, the final chapter of my story unwritten, but I would face it with the courage Grace had always believed I possessed, stepping into the unknown with the hope that, in the end, fire would cleanse both the land and my soul. Life on the farm was my whole world, a world as vast and lonely as the endless bushland that stretched around us. We had sheep that bleated softly in the mornings, their wool a tangled mess of whites and grays, and cows whose mooing filled the air as my parents milked them at dawn. People from town would come in big white trucks to collect the milk vats, and I would stand by the fence, waving at them with a grin that stretched from ear to ear, but they hardly ever waved back. To them, I was just another fixture of the countryside, as inconsequential as the pebbles on our dirt driveway. Our farm wasn't large, but it was all I knew. Surrounded by bushland that seemed to go on forever, it was a place of isolation, miles away from the nearest neighbor. The town was a distant place where other kids went to school and played together, while I spent my days in solitude, save for the company of animals and the whispering trees. I wasn't much of a talker at school. The few friends I could have made were put off by the distance of my home from civilization, making after-school hangouts an impossibility. So, I became a shadow in the halls, moving silently from class to class, yearning for a connection that never came. At home, my parents were always busy. The farm demanded all their time and energy, leaving me to my own devices. There were days I wouldn't see my dad at all, his presence only known by the distant sound of machinery, or the occasional shout carried by the wind. My mom was slightly more visible, though usually only seen in passing as she hurried to and from the kitchen, her hands always full, her face always lined with worry. To keep out of trouble and away from the dangers that my mom warned me about, like the deep, treacherous waters of the dam, I found my own little corner of the farm to explore. It was away from the main hustle, a place where the trees lined our driveway in a welcoming committee of sorts. At least, they did until Dad decided they were a hazard and took them down one by one, leaving behind nothing but stumps. I remember Mom's disappointment at the loss, her fondness for the trees evident in the way she'd touched their bark gently, as if saying goodbye. But Dad was adamant, and soon, all that remained were the tall, uneven stumps stark against the landscape. Those stumps became my friends. I'd spend hours with them, assigning names and creating elaborate stories. The two largest were the king and queen of my imagined realm, with the smaller clustered ones as their children. In the loneliness of the farm, they were my confidants, my subjects, and my protectors. But as the days grew shorter and the weather turned, I found myself drawn inside, away from my wooden kingdom. My parents, preoccupied with their never-ending work, barely noticed the change, and I, in turn, began to forget about my silent friends, their faces fading into the backdrop of my everyday life. It was during this time, as winter wrapped the farm in its cold embrace, that the first whispers began. Soft at first, like the rustle of leaves, they grew louder each night, scratching at my window, calling my name in a voice that seemed as familiar as it was terrifying. I tried to ignore them, burying my head under the covers and willing them to go away, but they persisted, a constant reminder that even in my isolation, I was never truly alone. The whispers didn't stop. If anything, they grew louder, more insistent, scratching at my window with a persistence that turned my nights into endless stretches of fear. At first, I told myself it was just the wind, or the branches of the nearby trees reaching out to tap against the glass. But deep down, I knew it was something more, something that chilled me to my very core. "Leah," they would call, drawing out my name like a sigh on the breeze. I'd pull the covers up to my chin, eyes squeezed shut, trying to convince myself I was imagining things. But how could my imagination leave marks? Because that's what happened next. I woke one morning to find scratches on my arms, thin and precise as if drawn by the tip of a nail. I hid them from my parents, afraid of what they'd say, afraid they'd think I was doing it to myself. But the scratches became harder to hide, especially when they appeared on my back, places I couldn't have reached on my own. That's when my parents noticed. Their concern quickly turned to something else, something that looked a lot like fear. Not of what was hurting me, but of me, their daughter, who they suddenly saw as a stranger. They took me to a psychiatrist, someone who asked me questions with a pen and notepad always at the ready. I tried to explain about the whispers, the shadows, the undeniable fear that clung to me each night. But the more I talked, the more I saw that familiar look of fear in their eyes too. They diagnosed me with all sorts of things, words I barely understood. Schizophrenia, depression, depersonalization. Words that made my parents exchange worried glances and sigh heavily on the drive home. For a while I stayed at an inpatient facility, a place where the nights were quieter, and the scratching at my window was replaced by the soft sounds of other patients stirring in their sleep. I missed the farm, the openness, even the tree stumps. But I didn't miss the fear, the constant looking over my shoulder, waiting for the whispers to start again. The day I returned home, I felt a heavy knot in my stomach. Part of me had hoped that everything would go back to normal, that I'd realize it was all in my head. But the other part, the part that kept me awake at night, knew better. The whispers came back with a vengeance, more desperate, more demanding. They called my name, pleaded for help, in a voice that sounded too human to be dismissed. And the scratches, they were worse, covering my skin like a tapestry of pain. My parents were at a loss, torn between their love for me and their inability to understand what was happening. I wanted to scream, to tell them it wasn't me, that something was terribly wrong. But fear kept me silent. Fear of being sent away again. fear of the unknown force that seemed to have claimed me as its own. As the whispers grew louder, so did my despair, a constant companion in the darkness that had become my life. I was caught in a nightmare, one that refused to end with the dawn, leaving me to wonder if I'd ever find my way back to the light. Spring brought a hesitant warmth that seemed to push the shadows away, at least during the day. But as the sun set each night, my fear returned, a faithful companion in the darkness. It was a fear that grew from whispers and scratches, from the feeling of being watched, even in my own room. Yet, as the seasons changed, so did something inside me, a determination maybe, or a desperate need for closure. I couldn't live in fear forever. One afternoon, driven by a mixture of curiosity and a newfound courage, I ventured back to where it all began, the tree stumps. They seemed smaller, less menacing in the sunlight, but the memories they evoked were anything but. Standing there, I felt a mix of nostalgia and dread. These were my friends, my confidants, in a time when I had no one else. Could they really be at the center of my nightmares? I spoke to them, just like I used to, half expecting no answer but needing to hear my own voice in the silence. "Thank you," I said. For what? I wasn't entirely sure. Maybe for the memories, or perhaps for surviving the fear they'd inadvertently caused. The reply came, a voice so clear and unexpected that I stumbled back, tripping over my own feet. "You're welcome." The voice was neither menacing nor friendly. It was simply there, a presence that couldn't be ignored. I ran. I ran as I had never run before, propelled by a terror that felt all too familiar. The breath on my neck, the whisper of my name. I was 8 years old again, fleeing from shadows that seemed all too real. When I reached home, panting and wide-eyed, my mom dropped the vegetables she was peeling, rushing to my side. Her fear mirrored my own, but there was no time to explain. The police arrived, searching the farm with a thoroughness born of grim necessity. The stumps were inspected, and then, the discovery that would haunt my nights forever. The largest stump, the one I had named the King, hid a cavity within its core, a hideout that could conceal a person. Inside, they found items that chilled my blood, remnants of a presence, of someone living amongst us, unseen. But the most horrifying discovery was the teeth of a little girl, a child who had vanished months before, turning my nightmares into a reality too grim to comprehend. The police searched, but no one was found. Questions were asked, but no answers came. The only truth that emerged was the undeniable fact that someone had been there, a ghost in my childhood memories, a specter in the shadows. Time passed, and the whispers faded, becoming a distant memory, a story I told myself had ended. But deep down, I knew. I knew that some stories don't have endings, just pauses, waiting for the right moment to return. Years later, watching my daughter play, I saw history threatening to repeat itself. The panic that surged through me was instant, visceral. I couldn't let it happen again, not to her. So I did the only thing I could. I pulled her away from the shadows, from the whispers that might follow. But as I tucked her into bed that night, the scratches appearing on her skin told me the story was far from over. The darkness had returned, or perhaps it had never left, lurking in the corners of our lives, waiting for the moment to emerge from the shadows once again. Part 1. In the dwindling twilight, Nicholas's boots crunched softly against the damp earth of the forest floor, the only sound in the otherwise silent wilderness. He and his partner had arrived at their remote line camp on the California-Oregon border, a speck of human life in the vast expanse of untamed forest that stretched out around them. Their mission was simple in words, but daunting in task: to forge a path for the Southern Pacific Railroad through the dense, unyielding wilderness. The camp was makeshift, a collection of tents and tools, surrounded by the dense foliage that seemed to watch over them with ancient, knowing eyes. It was here, in this isolated patch of land, where the railway's ambition met the wild's indomitable will. Nicholas had always felt a thrill at being on the frontier of progress, but as the shadows lengthened and the forest's nocturnal chorus began, a flicker of unease danced in his stomach. They were not the first to carve through these woods. Surveyors had come before, mapping the land, their presence barely leaving a mark on the vast, untouched wilderness. Nicholas had heard stories from these early voyagers, tales of beauty and solitude, but also whispers of a lurking dread, an unseen menace that stalked the forest's deep shadows. On the fourth day, as the sun's rays struggled to pierce the thick canopy, the camp's routine was shattered. A single laborer returned from the woods, his face ashen, his eyes wide with a terror Nicholas had never seen before. The man's partner had vanished without a trace, swallowed by the forest's dense underbrush, or something far more sinister. The disappearance cast a pall over the camp. Search parties ventured forth, calling out into the indifferent wilderness, but the missing man remained lost, a ghost in the green vastness. The forest, it seemed, had claimed him, drawing him into its hidden depths where no human was meant to tread. Nicholas and his partner pressed on, the railroad's demands unyielding. But the work was different now, tainted by the knowledge of their vulnerability. The forest was no longer just a physical barrier to be overcome. It was a living, breathing entity, watching them with unseen eyes, its intentions obscure and possibly malevolent. As days turned to weeks, the missing man became a specter haunting their every step, a constant reminder of the forest's dominance. And then, just as suddenly as he had disappeared, he was found. Stumbling into the camp, naked, bruised, and babbling incoherently, the lost laborer was a shell of the man he once was. His tale, once he could piece it together, was of a horror so profound, so beyond the realm of their understanding, that it chilled Nicholas to his core. A giant ape-like creature, he claimed, had abducted him, dragging him deep into the forest to a dark, damp cave. There, he was subjected to a torment that was both physical and psychological, a nightmare that no human mind could fully comprehend or endure. Nicholas listened, his skepticism battling with the undeniable evidence before his eyes. The man's wounds were real, as was the fear that clung to him like a second skin. The forest, it seemed, held secrets far darker than any of them had imagined, ancient and untamed forces that did not take kindly to their intrusion. As the story spread, a silent agreement was reached. They would finish their work, lay the tracks that would bring progress to these wild lands, but they would do so with a newfound respect, perhaps even fear, of the ancient wilderness that surrounded them. For in the heart of the forest, beyond the reach of sunlight and the ambition of man, there lurked a reminder of our place in the world, a guardian of the threshold between the known and the unknowable. Part 2. Patrick Garver, accustomed to the predictability of his life as a design engineer, found himself on a deserted stretch of road through Chandlerville, Illinois. It was the kind of night that swallowed sound, the darkness so thick it felt tangible, a blanket draped over the world, save for the narrow beam of his car's headlights cutting a path ahead. He wasn't a man given to flights of fancy. His world was one of precision, of measurements and calculations, where every problem had a solution if you just applied the right formula. Yet, as his car hummed along the empty highway, slicing through the heart of the Midwest's sprawling farmland, Patrick couldn't shake the feeling of being an intruder in a world that belonged to the night. At 59, Patrick's experiences had grounded him in reality, but nothing could have prepared him for what happened next. Ahead, in the distance, he noticed another vehicle's taillights, a small comfort in the enveloping darkness. It was a reference point, a reminder that he wasn't entirely alone in this vast, nocturnal landscape. Then it happened. A shape, impossibly large and moving with a grace that belied its size, leaped across the road. It was over in a heartbeat, the creature crossing the distance in two massive bounds, but the image was seared into Patrick's mind. He saw it turn, its eyes catching the light, a momentary glimpse into a world that wasn't supposed to exist. Patrick's heart hammered against his ribcage, his engineer's mind racing to rationalize what he'd just seen. It couldn't be what it looked like. There had to be a logical explanation. A deer, perhaps, though no deer he knew moved like that. But deep down, in a place he wasn't used to acknowledging, Patrick knew he hadn't seen any ordinary animal. As he continued to drive, the silence of the night felt heavier, the darkness more oppressive. His mind replayed the sighting over and over, trying to fit this square peg of an experience into the round hole of his rational, measured life. He didn't stop, not until the lights of the next town promised safety and a return to normalcy. There, under the harsh glow of a street lamp, Patrick pulled over. His hands shook slightly as he reached for his phone, a lifeline to the rational world. He texted his wife and kids, the words feeling absurd as he typed them out. Saw something strange on the road, might have been a Bigfoot. The replies were swift, a mix of concern and excitement. His family's reaction anchored him, reminded him of who he was. Yet, as he resumed his drive home, the encounter lingered in his mind, an unsolved equation that defied explanation. In the days that followed, Patrick shared his story with a select few co-workers, half expecting ridicule but finding instead a well of similar stories, whispered tales of sightings and encounters that painted a picture of a world just beyond the veil of the known. It was a revelation, a crack in the facade of his carefully constructed reality. Patrick found himself diving into research, into the lore and legends of Bigfoot, a topic he'd never given much thought before. His encounter on that lonely stretch of road had opened a door, and though part of him longed to close it, to return to the comfort of his measured existence, another part was irresistibly drawn to the mystery, to the possibility of undiscovered wonders lurking in the shadows of the world he thought he knew. Part 3. The humid air of Papua New Guinea clung to the skin like a second layer, thick and omnipresent. It was here, amid the dense foliage of the jungle near Lake Pung, that a story as old as the hills themselves breathed life into the legends whispered among the natives. Gideon, now a man grown but still carrying the wide-eyed wonder of his youth, recounted the tale to the Americans who had come so far, drawn by tales of the Ropin, a creature of the skies that defied modern understanding. Carl Baugh and James Bloom, driven by a thirst for discovery that matched the intensity of the equatorial sun, listened with a skepticism born of scientific rigor, but softened by the undeniable sincerity in Gideon's voice. Years before, Gideon and his friends, mere boys then, had ventured towards Lake Pung, their hearts light with the thrill of adventure. What awaited them was not the tranquility of nature, but an encounter that would brand itself into their memories, an indelible mark of fear and awe. As Gideon spoke, his voice carried the weight of the experience, the image of the Ropin as vivid in his recollection as if it had happened yesterday. The creature, massive and imposing, with wings that blotted out the sun, had swooped down, not with the grace of a bird, but with the authority of a being unchallenged in its dominion. The Americans, Baugh and Bloom, had come armed with technology and skepticism, ready to peel away the layers of myth to reveal the kernel of truth beneath. Yet, as they listened, the jungle around them seemed to close in, a reminder that they were not in their world of concrete and calculations, but in a realm where legends breathed. Jonathan Whitcomb, who arrived later, brought with him a forensic eye, trained to discern truth from fiction. Yet the story he heard from Gideon, unvarnished and unembellished, presented a puzzle that defied easy solutions. Gideon's account, supported by the corroboration of others who had witnessed the same terrifying majesty, suggested that the Ropin was no mere figment of the imagination, but a creature that existed in the tantalizing space between known and unknown. The expeditions into the heart of the jungle, though they yielded no concrete evidence, were not failures but rather steps on a journey that challenged the very way they viewed the world. Each night, as they camped under the stars, the darkness around them seemed alive with the possibility of discovery, a reminder that the world held secrets yet to be uncovered. In the end, the Americans returned home, their luggage filled with samples, their cameras bereft of the proof they had sought, but their minds alight with the realization that mystery still held sway in the corners of the world untouched by the march of progress. Gideon, for his part, remained the guardian of a tale that was both a burden and a privilege, a bridge between the world of his ancestors and the modern seekers of truth. The Ropen, elusive and enigmatic, continued to soar in the skies of Papua New Guinea, a symbol of the untamed and unknown, a challenge to those who believed the world had yielded all its secrets. The story of the encounter at Lake Pung, passed from Gideon to the Americans and beyond, became a testament to the enduring allure of mystery, a reminder that some legends resist the confines of explanation, soaring instead in the boundless skies of imagination and wonder. As the stories of Nicholas, Patrick Garver, and Gideon weaved through the fabric of the unknown, they each stood as testament to the enduring mystery that shrouds our world. From the dense forests of the California-Oregon border to the remote roads of Illinois and the exotic jungles of Papua New Guinea, these tales span the globe, yet were united by a common thread, the confrontation with the inexplicable. Nicholas, whose early days were spent toiling on the railroad, had encountered a beast of legend, a reminder of the wilderness's depth and the secrets it held. His tale, passed down through generations, bore the marks of skepticism and disbelief, yet it resonated with a truth that was hard to dismiss. The forest, vast and unyielding, had revealed a sliver of its hidden life, a glimpse into the untold stories that it guarded fiercely. Patrick Garver, a man of science and reason, found his world upended one night on a lonely stretch of road. The creature that crossed his path challenged the boundaries of his understanding, propelling him into a quest for answers that led him deeper into the lore of the land. His encounter, though met with raised eyebrows and cautious skepticism, opened a door to the realization that the world was far more complex and mysterious than he had ever imagined. Gideon, bridging the gap between the ancient and the modern, carried the weight of his encounter with the Ropen. His story, though steeped in the fantastical, was grounded in the reality of his experience, an unshakable testimony to the existence of the extraordinary. The jungles of Papua New Guinea, lush and vibrant, served as the backdrop for a revelation that blurred the lines between the known and the unknown, challenging the scientific community to expand its horizons. As these stories unfolded, they painted a portrait of a world teeming with hidden wonders, where the line between myth and reality was not as clear-cut as it seemed. The creatures that lurked in the shadows, whether clothed in fur, feathers, or mystery, were not just remnants of a bygone era or figments of the imagination, but were living, breathing entities that defied easy categorization. The search for understanding, the drive to uncover the truth behind these encounters, connected Nicholas, Patrick, and Gideon across time and space. Their experiences, though unique, were part of a larger narrative that spoke to the human spirit's unending quest for knowledge, a reminder that mystery still reigned supreme in the natural world. In the end, the tales of the giant ape-like creature Bigfoot and the Ropen stood as a mosaic of the human experience, a collection of stories that challenged our perception of reality. They served as a call to look beyond the borders of our understanding, to embrace the mystery that enveloped our world, and to acknowledge that, perhaps, we were not the masters of the universe we believed ourselves to be. In the vast, unexplored wilderness, both on land and in the depths of our imagination, there remain stories waiting to be discovered, truths waiting to be unveiled, and wonders that defied explanation, reminding us that the world was still a place of infinite possibilities and enduring mysteries.